All righty. What's going on, everybody?
Good morning.
Morning. When I say everybody, like no one's here yet. It takes like a minute or
You can
two
say
for
it's us, Taylor.
yeah. Gentlemen, good morning. It's good to see y'all.
Good morning, Taylor.
All right. So for those of you who eventually tune in or see this in the future on the interwebs, want to give you a quick background on what Unicorn Finders is. So Unicorn Finders was, we started this thing. When I say we, me, Dan, and Jake. Jake's at this point our imaginary friend in Raleigh who doesn't exist. And Jake, so we started this thing because we all like each other outside of work. And we want an excuse to hang out. So I started in March of 2020. 3.5 years later, we're still doing this thing. Maybe some more hit or misses lately, but we're still doing it. And we've pivoted a few times, but basically our unofficial slogan is we're trying to find cool companies doing cool shit you probably haven't heard of yet. So that's what we do. We're excited to have Brian on the show today. Brian is a he lives in Nashville. I'm not saying he's a Nashvillian, but he's in Nashville. He's in my own backyard. Actually, technically not really. It's like 30 minutes to get where Brian is right now for me. But
isn't anybody that lives in Nashville a Nashvillian? Like maybe he's not a native,
I want to preface this because like maybe people who were like born in Nashville get upset when I say Nashville. I don't know. People are weird with that stuff.
They get upset. Well,
they
about
can get over it.
Yeah, we're not an eighth generation Floridian like you are. Eighth or seventh.
That's true. That's true. You guys aren't Floridians at all. So
exactly. So Brian, let's kick it off, man. What do you do right now? Let's dive into Calendaristic and a little bit about your background on how you got here.
Yeah, sure. So I have a background as a software engineer, but I grew a company over the last decade from zero to 100 people as a co-founder. And one of the problems that we ran into when we went remote, particularly after COVID, prior to being remote, we had two conference rooms, right? So meetings were limited to how often is that conference room booked, and it was often booked, right? But when you went remote, the wheels fell off. You could create as many meetings as you want. Particularly recurring meetings. And we got a lot of feedback that meetings were growing in number and quantity. And, you know, we needed to address it, but we had no visibility into that. And as a manager, one of the things that we think about a lot is metrics and, you know, measuring things over time. Is the trend of meetings actually going up, or is that all in our heads because this is COVID and things are weird? So I went looking for a tool that would do that and couldn't find anything. And so when I exited the company in 2022, one of the things on the top of my list that I wanted to tackle was build a dashboard for meetings. Is that something that we can do? Our company was on Google Workspace, so that was the first space that I tackled. Was integrating into Google Workspace and basically allow someone to log in and see across their organization, how much time are we spending in meetings? Is it going up? Is it going down? Is it unreasonable compared to companies of similar size, maybe the same industry? You know, does the sales department spend more time in meetings than the engineering team? You know, you can break it down by department. You can set up monitoring and alerts for, you know, if the number of meetings gets over a certain threshold, you know, average number of hours per week, let us know. Also things like meeting size, right? I blogged about this recently. There's research that shows that the larger a meeting is, the less effective it is. Partially,
right. Yeah.
Feel like they're
yeah.
just not participating, right?
Right.
So is that creeping up over time? The company that I co-founded and sold was a data company in the healthcare space. So it felt like this was a natural fit for me to kind of get back into coding again and build out a tool that took some of the things that we learned in that space and applied it to specifically metrics around meetings. So that's what Calendaristic is and what it tries to do.
So to touch me a little bit about how you guys are doing that, is it up to the company to decide? I mean, I guess talk to me about the metrics. So you mentioned a few things. How many meetings are we having to compare to other companies in the same industry, probably similar size? How analytical are these metrics getting, or right now they're pretty surface level kind of
Yeah, it's pretty surface level. It's based on things that I can find research that suggests that number is important. And I'll give you an example, right? As a software developer, there was a book called Accelerate that said, okay, these four metrics correlate with the success of a company, right? Things like lead time to change, how much time does it take you to revert a bad deployment? Those kinds of things. Okay, what's the research around meetings, right, that says if you have over this number of hours or you have the sizes that are this large, they have an adverse impact on So it's not just showing you a dashboard. It's showing you a dashboard that's supposed to be backed up by research, right? Okay. And the long-term goal is that you will be able to configure those kinds of alerts yourself as the user, right, as the manager. But the way that we're starting things out is, like, here's the things that you probably want to look at based on the research.
Gotcha. So I can be like, hey, Sam, you're spending 40 hours worth of your week in meetings, and you've produced zero things in the last 6 months. Let's start to get to the bottom.
Yeah.
Of this. Are you a professional meeting goer, or are you doing a job?
Yeah.
That needs to be my title on LinkedIn, professional meeting goer.
I felt like that as a CTO at some point. And I mentioned this, Taylor, earlier.
Yeah, I was about to ask you, talk about how many hours you're in meetings a week.
I mean, I'm a metrics guy, so I actually kept a Google sheet of each week and how many hours I spent in that week. And my average was around 30 to 35 hours a week in meetings on camera. And that's frankly exhausting. And I wanted a tool that would automatically aggregate that on a departmental level. Because there's the whole thing with, like, are your meetings effective, and there are tools to make them more effective.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But how do you know that it's actually impacting the amount of time that people are spending in meetings? If it's effective, then you would assume that there's less meetings, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how do you measure that? And there just wasn't a tool to do that. So kind of approaching it from that way and thinking about, you know, there are tons of tools out there that will help you to make things more effective, but there's not a lot of tooling out there that actually tells you whether or not it was successful.
Are you, and I'm going to kind of, so do you foresee this tool being like super robust, or do you see this kind of being like, hey, we're just going to be more of a tool that can help guide conversations. And then at the end of the day, like, if you guys want to deep dive, that's more of the one-on-one. Because I could see this going two ways, right? I could see you getting super granular. How many people show up to the meeting? You could even integrate probably some AI. I know Teams, I think, has it now where it's like, how many people talk? Did you talk the most?
Right. Yeah.
I'm sure there's so many ways. But it sounds like you just know, hey, businesses and teams need a simple tool where they can just track meeting times, and that's it. Which there's nothing wrong with that. Is that kind of what you're trying to do?
All right. It's more than just tracking meeting times. It's tracking trends, right? Yeah. And departmental trends. And that information can actually tell you more than just the time that you spend in meetings. For example, if you have a sales team with five or six people and they're making outbound calls, right? You know, they have a certain number of calls that they need to make each week. They're booking that stuff on their calendar. If their calendars are full at a certain threshold across the company, you need to add an additional salesperson. So it helps inform you as far as how you need to shape your business too, right? It gives you answers that are kind of leading indicators on, should I add an extra person to this team? So it can make useful information like that available that might not be available in any other way. But a little background, you know, I've done the VC thing, right? And I'm not interested in this thing being everything around a meeting, right? This is a small venture. I'm building out something here that I want to be an extremely niche tool. As a background as a software engineer, I have a very biased opinion that I like tools that do one thing well. And maybe that feeds into another tool, integrates with another tool that does that one thing well, right? So kind of the Unix philosophy of you pipe information from one utility to the next. And what I want to do is make it very abundantly clear how much time your organization is spending in meetings and how that has changed over time and how that compares to other companies of similar size and industry.
I love that. Let's talk about some startup stuff, right? I mean, what are some things you've learned? You know, it's fun. We don't really get a lot of, I mean, Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, we don't get a lot of individuals who are like engineers, IT folks who are also founders as well, right? So it's this is kind of a different conversation for us. Talk about your journey in you know, the tech world of like starting, strategizing, things to keep in mind, and then obviously now as you're kind of starting your own thing, what do you think engineers specifically need to keep in mind before they start something? Because I feel like engineers always want to start something.
Yeah,
they're always has like 16 side projects going on.
Yeah, right.
So what's your advice to those folks?
Sure. I've been guilty of that, right? I've always got side projects going, and I think I've got a great idea. I think there's two things. One is if you can find a co-founder to work with you, One of the things that made Stratasan successful was the partnership that I had with my co-founder and our CEO, Jason Moore. Our values were aligned, right? And that was something that became very clear before we even started working with each other, that it was going to be a good fit. He's the biz dev guy, right? I can build the thing, but I can't sell the thing. That's just not me. That's him. He's building those relationships and also determining the vision for where the company is going to go. I'm the executor of that idea, right? So finding that person that is going to be complementary to your skill set is critical. And yes, engineers can often be undervalued by the business world, but I feel like that often recurs in reverse, right? We kind of dismiss marketing and sales as those people, right? And yeah, don't understand that's talent too. That's a talent that's critical getting the word and awareness about your product out into the market, right? So don't discount those skills. Find a strong marketing or salesperson that's going to partner with you. Include them in the business strategy that you're forming, and you'll be off to the races. The other thing that I would say is, you know, funding versus not funding. I've done the funding thing. Funding is great. We would not have made it where we did without the advice and counsel of some of our venture capital partners. What they did was extremely valuable, but it comes with strings in the sense that they're always looking to make a financial return in 3 to 5 years, right? So the mantra is grow, grow, grow. And you're always looking for, you know, I've released a product. What's the next big thing, right? And so with Calendaristic, what I'm hoping to do is basically find that niche, get some customer feedback that says, well, if you did this, it would solve this other problem, you know, that's adjacent to what I'm doing, and kind of build those things out slowly over time, kind of following the Basecamp model sort of, and iterate that particular product rather than trying to launch into adjacent vertical, you know, whatever else I can tackle, right? Just for the sake of growth.
Yeah. Dan, wait, do you got anything? I was
talking. I'm formulating something. Go ahead.
Brian, I want to ask about when it comes to growing this thing. Mm-hmm. What does it look like for pricing? How do you think you'll structure this business? Because I think, you know, you could look at a Calendly tool where it's like, what, 100, you know, like I think they do like a bundle, it's like what, $200 or $300 a year, or like a certain amount of month. Have you thought about how you're going to create pricing structure?
Yeah, I absolutely have. So I think we're going to do the freemium model. Right now there's a way to log in with your account and view stats and trends on your individual calendar within a company, right? And you can even do this with your Gmail account. Yeah. But if you're an organization, maybe there's some extra tiers that are involved. You might get a snapshot for the last like 6 weeks for free. But then if you want to go back quarter over quarter, you pay a little bit. I'm not thinking that it'll be per user pricing. I'm thinking maybe it'd be just tiered. You know, if you have less than 100 people, it costs you this. If you have less than 1,000, it'll cost you this, that kind of thing. One thing that I have to be sensitive of is that there are limits on the Google API, right? So I have to think about balancing. If I grow too fast and I can't get Google to up the API requests ceiling that they've imposed on me, I have to be very careful about making sure that I use that in a wise way. So it's a controlled growth scheme.
Sure.
I don't have a pricing plan in place right now. It's not integrated right now. Everything's free, right? Because right now I just desperately need feedback. You know, this useful? And if it's not, then hey, I got an index, you know, database of like startup ideas. I'll go to the next one. That's fine.
Sure. What's the feedback been like? I mean, do you have some companies using it?
I have a couple, and I actually have a meeting later today with a company that's exploring it. And it seems like the niche is kind of 20 to 50 people in growth mode. You know, you've got
like Gun.io.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And if you're on Google Workspace, sign in and give it a shot. But it's that kind of growth mode where you've got management who's adding more and more people, and they know that the number of meetings is going up, and they're going, are we efficiently using our time here? Right. So if you get much larger than that, you've got more processes in place. It doesn't seem to be as useful. So that's kind of the target that I'm going after right now.
I love that.
I'm trying to think big picture here, Brian, on just meetings in general. And I think a lot of them are useless. Like, in fact, if you want to have the headline, like, could this meeting be an email question mark, like calendar is right.
Right.
Why do you think meetings have become so pervasive? And then with this feedback that you're going to provide to them and compare to other similar size organizations, what should companies glean out of determining this needs to be a meeting, this doesn't need to be a meeting, and like, what can we do to help drive like business from learning what others are doing, but more importantly, not just like, hey, we're below the 50% when it comes to meetings. It's like, yeah, that's kind of cool. If we had some more, could we be even more successful as a company, or vice versa? So what can somebody like theoretically like glean and help manage a business as somebody that's built a, you know, a huge company yourself?
Yeah. You just asked like 10 questions. Let me see if I can break them
down. I did. So just, you know, feel free to knock them off in order that I gave them to you.
Yeah. Okay. It. So why do we have more meetings? I think hybrid workforce is part of it, right? Hybrid or remote, mm-hmm. right? Just itself. You don't, you're not in the same building anymore, and you've still got to get information from one department or one person to another, right? And so figuring out how to do that in an efficient way, most people default to meetings, right? Rather, and so one of the things that I've seen with successful remote companies prior even to COVID, an example of this is GitLab. They have a great remote work handbook that they built back in the day, and it's something that we borrowed heavily from at Stratasan. Written culture or culture of writing is part of the thing that will alleviate, you know, meetings, right? So things like RFCs, requests for comment, you know, things that the thing that I discovered at Stratasan, though, that you can have a written culture, but it's not going to work if you don't also have a reading culture, right? Mm-hmm. So someone's got to be also reading these things. And have got to get more better at training folks on how to write. Not just is the prose readable, but is it too verbose? Did you write, mm-hmm. you know, it was a 2-page document. It could have been a paragraph, you know, those kinds of things. Getting good feedback on those things. So that's true, not even just for avoiding the meeting, but even if there's a meeting, right? One of the things that contributes to meetings being larger is you have all these people in the room who just want to know what the decision was.
Yeah.
If they weren't there, they don't know. So actually having a good written summary, and there are some AI tools that are kind of, you know, hopefully going to help.
We use Phantom at Gunn.
Yeah. So. Right. Yeah. So those kinds of tools are helpful. I'm sure sometimes it requires a human to kind of review it to make sure that caught everything. But what decisions were made and what are the actions that need to happen after this meeting? If you can, distribute that to all the people who need to know those things, they shouldn't have to spend an hour in the meeting to figure that out, you know. What could have been an email summary.
Sure.
So, mm-hmm. Those are the things that I think have contributed to it. Another thing that I've seen in highly bureaucratic companies is kind of a CYA culture, right? Of everyone who could be impacted by this needs to be in the room so that they can object at the time that the decision was made. And so later they, you know, they don't come back and say, well, you made this decision. Well, you were in the meeting when we did it. So why didn't you say, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the fear of missing out. Like, I just need to be in the mm-hmm. meeting because I'm afraid I'm going to miss something that important happens, mm-hmm. right? So those are mm-hmm. kind of cultural things that need to be addressed at a company. That was your first question. What was
that? Oh, and then I had a whole litany of questions here. And then I think I went into like, once you get this data,
right,
evaluating it, and like, it's not just, hey, we have more meetings in this company, we need to cut down, or we have less mm-hmm. meetings, should we have more, right? Like, not reading too much into the data, but like, how do you then take that data and then turn it into tangible action?
Yeah, I am curious.
Like, maybe
go ahead, Dan. Sorry.
No, go ahead, Taylor.
I just, like, you know, you said you were in a meeting for 35 hours in 1 week. So you get sent that report. Like,
yeah.
Are you guys going to provide like
right
anything out of that? Or is like, hey, you're just in 35 hours worth of meetings, figure it out.
Yeah. I think it's more towards the latter, and that's because we don't know. Sometimes 35 hours might be necessary, right? Right. In my case, I was able to trim it down a little bit, but that was my job. My job was mm-hmm. to talk
that
to
is
people.
True.
I was a manager, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. So that was part of the job description. One of the things that we have in the pipeline is being able to kind of toggle between a management view, like how much time is management spending versus non-management, because you want your IC, your individual contributors, those folks need to be spending less time in meetings because that's not their job. Right. Management, they're going to be higher generally across the board just because that's just what you do. Right. Mm-hmm. So, but we're agnostic as to how you use that information. We are kind of building some content guidance around, you know, look, if you think it's your hire, here's some strategies or tools that you might use to get it down. But we're going to leave that up to the end user.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to see. I know that I spend far too much time in meetings and usually unplanned meetings. Those are my least favorite kind of
meetings. Well, how do you know? Are you just looking at your calendar? You know.
Yeah. Hey, I see that you have an open block here. Let's just carve out some time here. It's like, I don't want to carve out time.
Yeah. Right. I'm tired. You know, please leave me alone.
I'm tired of meetings, you know? And I think that we're getting to a point where I think most people are tired of meeting. I mean, but you make so many great points. And I think it's, you know, the fear of missing out. I think it's like main character syndrome a little bit. And a lot of people are like, you know, this is going to be a decision that one day may tangentially impact, you know, my line of business. So I've got to be involved here. It's like, well, not really. You know, I think the biggest thing for me is just wondering, like, how do we then take that quantifiable data and then, and obviously you're now passing that on to the business to say, hey, was this a good use of time or a bad use of time? Right. To be able to figure it out, but saying, hey, like, you know, of your individual contributors, 60% of their time is spent in meetings. Let's take a look at how important are those to the business, which I think is valuable. And it's easy, right? You just click into a screen and say, hey, John over here is spending 34 hours in meetings and hasn't closed a deal in 6 months, right?
Right. Yeah, I should mention that we are actually doing some data analysis. And when you first log in, you get a dashboard of recommendations of things that you can do that might make things better for you. I'll give you an example. Google has a way for you to set up speedy meetings, right? So that when you block an hour, it's only 50-minute meeting, right? Or if you block a half hour, it's a 25-minute meeting. So it cuts them slightly short, and that helps with the transition between meetings. Because let me tell you, when you have back-to-back-to-back-to-back with no coffee break or bathroom break or anything.
You got to schedule, man. Sometimes you got to go pee. I mean, you just got to go to the bathroom.
We're human, right? Like, you know, whatever. You need to just stand up and walk around for a second. And so we're looking at your meetings and saying, are they all 30, 60, 90-minute blocks? And if so, let's recommend that they turn on speedy meetings, right? And this is unfortunately not a domain-wide setting. This is that users have to go in and change this themselves on Google Workspace. But if you're above a certain threshold in your company, we'll say, hey, you should maybe send an email out and encourage people to turn this on just for their mental health. So things like that, and also using tools like, you know, you say, hey, I don't want you to use that block. Google does have a way for you to build out focus time, right? And we'll report on that based on, you know, across your company, here's how much time is being blocked off for focus time. If you have a team that's high on ICs, maybe you want them to use that more, right? A lot of people aren't even aware that Google allows you to set up these different kinds of meetings, out of office time, focus time, and we can report on that stuff as well. So, you know, even use it for like, what's PTO look like for my team for the next 2 weeks, right? Who's going to be out? That will show up in the report.
That's interesting.
I'm looking forward to that feature in Outlook and I don't know, maybe 2028 or 2029.
Yeah, seriously. Outlook could have innovated. So, yeah, I don't want to get into that. I think this is cool. And Brian, I'm just going to give you my feedback of managing teams for a long time. And I'm sure you've seen it. People are wildly inefficient with their calendars. And I think if you could like provide some structure to, because I'm just trying to think of all the one-on-ones, especially at Vaco when I was working there, because that's when I was managing. This is the first time I haven't managed a team in a long time. It's quite nice. Most of my work was around people's calendars and like trying to figure out how to them to be productive. So having a way to help encourage people to know how to take meetings and how to structure their day could be a cool add-on within the app.
Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe looking for folks who have highly fragmented days, right? So if you're an IC, there's nothing worse than having a meeting every 90 minutes, because between 90, you know, you got 30 minute meeting, a 90 minute gap, another 30 minute meeting, you're not going to get anything done. So maybe looking for those kinds of patterns and identifying like, hey, these three users across your organization have super fragmented days. Maybe you want to go talk to them.
Yeah, I
think that there's a lot of, I think there's some features there in terms of like recommendations. You know, a lot of people do better maybe in having a back-to-back meeting rather than, you said, having one meeting and then having some time off, and because you're in that headspace already, it gets knocked out, and then you can focus on whatever you need to do. I've got a question, Brian. I am notoriously guilty of using my calendar for like reminders for myself. And I use my inbox as my to-do list. Can we like block those things out? Like, does it identify like what a meeting is versus a block on your calendar? That makes sense.
Right. So usually those kinds of meetings are going to only be you, right? So there's no,
right. Oh, so it's you connect with somebody else. Gotcha.
Yep.
And then you can also look for like some phony meetings on there too. Like if somebody has one that's like sent a meeting, but it was declined or not ever accepted, and they're like, I got to go to a meeting for 30 minutes. And then they went and played like Fortnite on their phone or whatever.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I know somebody guilty of that. That's sitting on the other side of this wall.
That's a nice trick. I haven't tried that one.
Yeah. Man. Anyway.
So Brian, as we wrap up here, I want to, what are some things if you're joining a startup, especially as an engineer, that you should be mindful of? Right. Because I think, you know, startups are still happening. People are getting funding. Things are still moving. So, you know, if you're wanting to jump into a startup as an engineer, what are some things to keep in mind and maybe ask?
Well, two of the things that I'm doing right now, Calendaristic is still kind of a pet project. It's, you know, I'm trying to get interest and awareness in it. But the thing that I do is my day job right now is fractional CTO. And technical due diligence for investment firms. And I think engineers could benefit from when you're joining, especially a startup, right? Asking questions about the underlying business. What is your business strategy? What does your roadmap look like for the next 3 years? What do you think you're going to get to profitability? You're almost thinking like an investor, right?
Yeah.
If because ultimately you're investing your time in this company, right? It's not dollars, but it's dollars. Your time is money. It kind of coming at it from a more critical business side. I also think that it lends itself to the kind of engineer that I think we're going to see more of in the future. It's the one that's aligned with the business, right? And this is true. Look, not just engineering, it's true of marketing and sales too. Businesses are looking for folks who are going to partner with them and actually think critically about, why are you doing this? You know, sometimes they may not have a great answer and they just need it done. That's fine. But someone who's actually going to not just be an order taker, right? Yeah. I need this button moved over here, but also understanding the underlying business, sitting in meetings with sales, sitting in meetings with customer support, understanding the problems that the customers have, those kinds of things. And so when I'm joining a startup, I want to ask them, how do you view engineers? Am I just an order taker? Or am I going to be a partner with you in the business and really understand the business problem? Because that's where I want to be. And I think most business people who are worth their salt are going to feel strongly about getting an engineer added to the team that's going to make their business better. It's going to form their technology roadmap, their product roadmap, those things that are all intertwined, and just be kind of a partner to the business more than just a, hey, go build that widget.
I love that. Yeah. And I think that's so important. I think a lot of engineers just don't ask questions. I think a lot of people just don't ask questions, right?
I think they're afraid to. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's kind of a, well, that's just not my thing. And I'm just the engineer. But, you know, I would encourage people to do so. One of the magic things about being an engineer is you can build businesses yourself, right? Like you have a lot of MBAs out there that are going, I need a technical co-founder. We'd love to see more engineers with an entrepreneurial streak that go, I'm going to solve that business problem, right?
Yeah.
And part of it is just getting out there and understanding the problem space, right?
Yeah.
I come from health tech. I spend a ton of time thinking about, you know, healthcare delivery, healthcare models, healthcare data. And the magic happens when you have a problem that's well-defined and you have an engineer that has a tool that can go solve that problem.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. Well, Brian, thanks, man. That
yeah,
was good. You know, I'm excited. I'm excited to see where this goes. You know, this is definitely very different than very different kind of business than we've interviewed, which is mm-hmm. awesome. So wish you the best of luck. Stay on real quick when we end so we can say bye to you. But for everybody tuning in or who has watched from afar, we appreciate it. Go check out Calendaristic. Listen, Brian's open to feedback. So if you work at a company that's a little small and you guys have a ton of meetings and you guys want to try out this product, shoot Brian a message. Brian, is going to calendaristic.com going to be the best way to get in touch with you and then send off an email from the website?
Yep, that'll work.
Cool. Awesome. Well, Brian, thank you again for hanging out with us. Y'all, thank you again for hanging out with us on Unicorn Finders. We'll be back next Thursday. See y'all.